This week on Grape Encounters Radio.
First of all, the wine lovers and the wine aficionados and the wine collectors and the wine geeks in Massachusetts and in other states are well aware of these issues, and they're well aware of the difficulties that they have accessing the wines that they want. Unfortunately, that group of people is relatively small, so their voices are not quite as loud.
And now, transmitting our signal to wine lovers of the world from our Atascadero Wine Cellar studio in the heart of the Central Coast wine country, we bring you Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to...
Oh man, I'll tell you what, there are a few things that get me steamed up on Grape Encounters. I like this to be a fun-loving show, you know, I'm always about the happy side of wine and what isn't happy about wine. I'll tell you what is not happy about wine is some of the ridiculous, absolutely archaic laws that we have across this country that still exist, these prohibition-era laws. Actually, I think they go back to the Victorian times. And there's a story that broke this week about some changes in legislation in Massachusetts. Now, if you're in California or some other more liberal state, then this won't mean much to you, but I think you should still be outraged all the same at how wine consumers are being treated in other parts of the country. Well, there's somebody who's been working very hard at trying to change a lot of this, and his name is Tom Wark. He is the executive director of the American Wine Consumer Coalition. He's on with us today, and Tom, I want to jump right into this because this is an important story. It's kind of a story that has a good side and a bad side to it. And in my mind, it's still more bad than good. But let's talk about what's happened in Massachusetts in the last few days.
That sounds great. Thank you for having me on, David.
Oh, welcome. You know what? When I saw this story, I absolutely changed what we were going to do on the show this week because I thought this story was so important.
It is an important story for a number of different reasons and from a number of different perspectives that is important. What's recently happened in Massachusetts is this: for a long, long time, residents of the state of Massachusetts have not been able to have any wine shipped to them from out of state. So the only wine they had access to was at the local retail store. And like in most states, the wines that exist in local retail stores is just a minuscule percentage of what's available nationwide.
But how does that wine get to the local retail store to begin with?
The way it gets to the local retail store is retailers are required to purchase their wine from distributors based in the state. Distributors purchase the wine from out-of-state wineries or importers who bring in imported wines. So the only thing available to retailers is what the wholesalers will sell them. And the wholesalers only bring in, as I said, really a minuscule amount of all the wines that are available across the country.
And it's also going to be the wines that they can make the most money on, too, is it not?
Well, the fact of the matter is most people who buy wine are content, you know, buying sort of the less expensive wines. So those wines, you'll definitely find on the shelves. But if you think about it like this, of all the wines that are produced, just say in the United States, those inexpensive wines are a very small percentage. The vast majority of wines that are produced in the United States are made in very small quantities, usually by very small wineries. So the vast majority of those wines simply don't make it to the retail shelves. A lot of them are only sold direct from the winery or shipped from the winery. And the problem in Massachusetts was that shipping wine into the state directly to the consumer had always been illegal, and that's recently changed.
And the rationale for it being illegal was what?
There were a number of different rationales. For the longest time, there simply was no economical way to get wine from the winery to the consumer across the country. The logistics simply weren't there. People weren't buying direct. There was no internet. As the internet came about and as e-commerce increased, people started to learn a lot about the different wines that were out there. They wanted to buy them. They were willing to pay the shipping. The logistic companies got involved, the FedExes and the UPSs. But the problem was, in the States, those distributors who really controlled the local retail market, they didn't like the idea of out-of-state wineries shipping wine into their states and going around them because they would be cut out of the profit margin. So they worked real hard to make sure that direct shipping remained illegal. And then in 2005, we had a Supreme Court decision that said, this is how it's going to work. A state can prohibit out-of-state wineries from shipping in. But if they do that, they have to stop in-state wineries from shipping also. The other alternative is to let everyone ship. And that was a 2005 Supreme Court decision. So since then, a lot of states have opened up for out-of-state shipping. Retailers and distributors have still fought that, but up until last week, there were 39 states that allowed out-of-state wine to be shipped in. Massachusetts was not one of them until last week. And so it's a big deal in Massachusetts. Now they can buy wine and have it shipped to them directly from out-of-state wineries, which means they have access to nearly any and all wines that are produced in the United States. However, there's still sort of a dark side to all this.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The law that allowed Massachusetts residents to have wine shipped to them also said the following. They may not have wine shipped to them from out-of-state wine stores or out-of-state wine retailers. And what that means is this. Massachusetts residents may not have any foreign wines shipped to them, French, Italian, Spanish, German, because in the United States, only wine retailers sell foreign wines. That's the only way to get them from a wine store. And if wine stores can't ship into the state, then that means that the shipment of foreign wines into Massachusetts are banned completely.
Okay, I got to think that a lot of people listening are saying, now, wait a second, those same distributors that you were talking about a moment ago, why wouldn't they also distribute the foreign wines?
Well, they do distribute foreign wines in the state. So in Massachusetts, if you go to a retail store, they'll have French and Italian and German wines on their shelves that they had purchased from the distributor or wholesaler. But the diversity of wines from France and Germany and from out of the country, the diversity is rather small. You only have a very small number. But if you were able to buy from retailers all across the country and have the wine shipped to you, then you would essentially have access to nearly every single imported wine that's sold in the United States. Just because a Massachusetts distributor doesn't distribute this particular French wine, there's going to be another one, say, in Colorado or California or in New York that does distribute it, and you can have that shipped to you. So by banning out-of-state wine retailers and wine stores from shipping into Massachusetts, you essentially ban the shipment of all foreign wines.
So you literally give all of the power to choose what we get to drink and what we have access to the distributors, and it's at their whim to decide which wines they're going to bring into the state of Massachusetts and which they're not.
That's exactly correct, David. And for the longest time, the distributors and the wholesalers who have this power have made the case that this is really the judicious thing to do because we need to have control. We can't trust out-of-state retailers or we can't trust out-of-state wineries to play by the rules and ship into the state and pay the taxes, which is really absurd in a lot of different ways. But as a result of this power, wholesalers have gained a tremendous amount of political power as a result of funneling a lot of the profits they've made back into campaign contributions. And it's rare that the wholesalers lose when it comes to policy debates because they just have so much power. Over the past 4 or 5 or 6 years, wholesalers have contributed millions and millions and millions of dollars to political campaigns across the country. In most states, alcohol wholesalers rank in the top 5 industries for campaign contributions. And that's why wholesaler interests are often overriding consumer interests.
Anybody in America, regardless of how much access you have to wine, ought to be absolutely outraged by this story. Absolutely outraged.
It's a perfect example of rent seeking. Rent seeking is a process where policies or laws are made to protect a particular economic interest and stop other people from competing with them. And that's exactly what's happening in this instance. By stopping consumers in Massachusetts from being able to buy wine from out-of-state retailers, they're checking the competition. And in the process, more importantly, they're really harming consumers. Why shouldn't someone who lives in Boston who can't find a bottle of, say, 1996 champagne be able to buy it from a California retailer or an Illinois retailer or a Texas retailer and have it shipped to them? The retailer is more than happy to pay taxes to the state of Massachusetts, more than happy to make sure that an adult signature is received. But the wholesalers, and in some cases the retailers in Massachusetts, have convinced the legislature to make sure this doesn't happen. So what the American Wine Consumer Coalition is involved in doing is trying to educate educate lawmakers, try to educate the public so that we can alter this new law in Massachusetts to make sure that residents there can also buy from out-of-state retailers.
We're talking to Tom Wark. He is the executive director of the American Wine Consumer Coalition, talking about new legislation that's been passed in Massachusetts. It sounds like a victory for the people of Massachusetts, and really, in many ways, it just underscores what I think is just plain old political corruption and archaic laws that continue to exist not just in Massachusetts, but other parts of the country. Tom, will you hang with me for a second and let's get a little deeper into this because I do have some very important questions that I need to ask. And I'm sure a lot of people in Massachusetts are wondering just exactly what they can do now as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and my guest, Tom Wark, in just a moment. Go no place other than, to the kitchen and refill that glass. Thanks a lot.
Grape Encounters is 100% estate grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
Talk about the adventure of a lifetime. Our listener trip aboard Region 7 Seas is a Grape Encounter that I will never, ever forget. And the folks who made this magical journey possible are Sterling Travel. I don't know of any travel agency that does a better job when it comes to creating unforgettable experiences. At Sterling Travel, they focus on excursions that are simply second to none. That's why they work with companies like Regent Seven Seas to make sure that your Sterling Travel experience takes you to incomparable destinations and immerses you in exceptional service that totally exceeds your expectations. Before, during, and after your trip, they're with you all the way, making sure that your vacation is completely and totally off the chart. They have all kinds of adventures waiting for you, and the best way to learn more about what Sterling Travel can do for you is to log on to SterlingTravelInc.com. That's SterlingTravelInc.com. Tell them you heard about it on Grape Encounters Radio.
This is the time of year when wine lovers start planning their pilgrimage to California's wine regions. The perfect inspiration and companion is the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Featured are profiles of dozens of Central Coast and Northern California wineries, along with hundreds of color images by renowned photographer Robert Holmes. Plus, highlights of tours, tastings, maps, and events. These beautiful directories make a fantastic gift. Be sure to like the California Directory of Fine Wineries Facebook fan page for wine country news and events each week. Click on the link at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's GrapeEncounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at GrapeEncounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues from our Central Coast San Luis Obispo County Wine Country Studio in Atascadero, California.
When the border yells, Massachusetts, I'll be there with bells, Massachusetts. Homesick as can be, Massachusetts. Only place for me, Massachusetts. Got a special date with...
And it's one of those Grape Encounters episodes where I just feel more than a little steamed up. I read this article and it seemed to me to be a double-edged sword, talking about some brand new legislation that's to some degree freeing the wine drinkers of Massachusetts, but not so quick. They can get some wines. They still can't get an awful lot of the good stuff, namely wines coming from other countries. They can get just a little bit. And there's a lot of political motivation behind it, helping us untangle what really goes on in the world of wine distribution is Tom Wark. He's the executive director of the American Wine Consumer Coalition, which I guess, Tom, you and others formed recently to try to take on some of these travesties.
Yeah, that's true. We were formed about a year ago. What we discovered was that whenever lawmakers take up issues that involve consumer access to wine, consumers were never consulted. It was only the wineries, the wholesalers, and the retailers that were consulted on these issues. And as a result, consumer interests were never taken care of. So we decided there needs to be a voice to represent consumers, and that's why the AWCC was founded. And we are entirely membership supported. In addition to having an advocacy voice on behalf of consumers, members of AWCC also have lots of great benefits that they get as a result of membership. So we're working hard to try to make it easier for consumers to access the wines they want.
Why are the people of Massachusetts not just outraged, and not just Massachusetts, but other states that are suffering under similar legislation? I mean, how can people not see what's going on here? And we talked a moment ago about how these wine distributors are literally feathering the nests of people who have these political motivations. It seems so obvious what's going on. I mean, it is obvious what's going on, and yet it continues to happen in this country, and I just plain don't get it.
Well, I think the issue is this. First of all, the wine lovers and the wine aficionados and the wine collectors and the wine geeks in Massachusetts and in other states are well aware of these issues, and they're well aware of the difficulties that they have accessing the wines that they want. Unfortunately, that group of people is relatively small, so their voices are not quite as loud. When we testified in Massachusetts about this law, we had a number of consumers come to the committee meeting and talk to the lawmakers about why it's important not only to allow out-of-state wineries to ship them wine, but also to allow out-of-state retailers to ship the wine. And the committee heard them and took no action whatsoever. It should also be noted that they also heard from the wholesalers, and they hear from the retailers who happen to give them campaign contributions. So it's not as though people don't know about this. It's just that the power they have to affect change isn't as great as some of the special interests that are involved in this issue on a regular basis. What it takes really is just continuing to talk about it, continuing to reach out to lawmakers, continuing to reach out to consumers who would be interested in this issue and ask them to sort of join the fight when they're able to. But don't get me wrong, there is good news in Massachusetts. Finally, people who live in Massachusetts can have wine shipped to them from out-of-state wineries. It's just that they have no access to shipment of imported wines because out-of-state retailers who sell those imported wines can't ship into Massachusetts.
Okay, why don't you and I, Tom, open up a distributorship in Massachusetts and start bringing in foreign wine? Can we do that?
Yeah, we absolutely could start a distributorship and then bring in lots and lots of foreign wines, but we could only sell those wines to Massachusetts retailers. And also, there's absolutely no way the David and Tom's distributorship in Massachusetts could bring in all the imported wines that would want to be in the marketplace.
We just bring in the good ones, Tom.
That sounds like fun to me. After all, it is the distributors who tend to make the money in this business. The bottom line, though, however, is that consumers really ought to be able to have access to the wines they want from the sources that they want, whether they get them from the wines that Tom and David bring into Massachusetts or whether they get them from a retailer in Washington or Oregon or California.
See, what I think we ought to do is that we ought to at least bring in a whole bunch of really good foreign wines, and then we run you for governor.
I want no part of that plan. I'm happy to stay in the wine business and want no part of politics.
Okay. Well, just think what a better world it would be if you were the governor of Massachusetts.
At least for the wine lovers,
yeah, absolutely. So in the minute or so that we have left, let's talk about the coalition. And, I mean, there are plenty of other states that have ridiculous laws. How do we really begin to affect change here? And how can people get involved in the coalition?
Well, it's pretty easy. You can learn more about the American Wine Consumer Coalition at wineconsumers.org, O-R-G, wineconsumersplural.org. And we're actually at the very end of our membership campaign for 2014. And by joining, we'll not only give you access to a number of different benefits, from wine education benefits, wine publication benefits, being able to buy wine at a discount, all sorts of different things. You'll also help fund the ability for wine consumers to have a voice. And we'll keep you informed with regular emails and newsletters that tell you what's happening across the country so that you can then go talk to other people and get involved where you can.
Do it. What, $35? Is that it?
Yeah, and until the end of July, it's only $20.14.
Okay, $20.14. Hey, let's free the wine drinkers of America in the regions that continue to be oppressed. Hey, there's a guy waiting out in the lobby that's coming on next. I think you might know this character.
Who is it exactly?
A guy by the name of Wilfred Wong.
I know Wilfred. I've tasted wine with Wilfred. He's a good man.
Which brings me to the question, what about buying wine online at places like wine.com, where Wilfred is now the chief storyteller?
It's a great source. And what's interesting about wine.com is they're a retailer, But they're not just in one state. Wine.com has set up warehouses in places like New York and Massachusetts and other states so that when they ship wine, they're not shipping from out of state.
Ah.
They actually have a business there.
Well, listen, Tom, I really appreciate having you on. It's Tom Wark of the American Wine Consumer Coalition. Join the coalition and join the fight. If you're in a state where you have access to all the wine you could ever want, think about living in a state where you don't.
Exactly.
Oh, a tragedy.
Thank you so much, Dave. Really appreciate it.
We'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this.
If you're like many wine lovers, you just can't seem to part with those corks, and the pile is growing. Turn that pile into style with an original cork cage holder from EpicStyle.com. Dozens of shapes and styles from windmills to wine barrels. These cork cages are a smash hit with wine aficionados, and you've got to see them at EpicStyle.com. Hundreds of items to add artistry and fun to any dinner or cocktail party. EpicStyle.com. Find gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Talk about the adventure of a lifetime. Our listener trip aboard Regent Seven Seas is a Grape Encounter that I will never, ever forget. And the folks who made this magical journey possible are Sterling Travel. I don't know of any travel agency that does a better job when it comes to creating unforgettable experiences. At Sterling Travel, they focus on excursions that are simply second to none. That's why they work with companies like Regent Seven Seas to make sure that your Sterling Travel experience takes you to incomparable destinations and immerses you in exceptional service that totally exceeds your expectations. Before, during, and after your trip, they're with you all the way, making sure that your vacation is completely and totally off the chart. They have all kinds of adventures waiting for you, and the best way to learn more about what Sterling Travel can do for you is to log on to SterlingTravelInc.com. That's SterlingTravelInc.com. Tell them you heard about it on Grape Encounters Radio.
When you're into wine, the perfect moment can be as simple as a well-chosen bottle, two glasses, and good company. But that perfect moment can be even more special when it includes some very cool accoutrements from EpicStyle.com. Beautiful decanters that are true works of art, preservation systems, extraordinary corkscrews, wildly creative coasters, amazing wine accessories for your table or home bar. And of course, Epic Style's now legendary cork cages. Even a perfect moment can be made a little more perfect with the help of thousands of products from EpicStyle.com.
He's back, and he's not alone. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
So put a little sip aside for me, cause my cup is running over for you. I don't know what it is he's got, but I can give you something to compare it to. Just want to taste your wine.
All right, time for Sipping with Sarah Schneider. Does it really matter why you like a wine? Does it only matter that you like the wine?
Can I just say yes?
Well, then the whole show would be over.
I think the bottom line is that, sure, all you need to know is that you like it. But you're going to be drinking a lot of different wines in your life. And by you, I mean the generic you out there. And sometimes it's hard to find one you like again. So you almost have to have some language, some words to be able to chase it down again.
Yeah, and I'm being a little facetious. I do spend a lot of time deliberating what it is that I like about this wine. But it may only be things that I understand.
True, which is a problem.
I mean, too many times there have been studies of wine judges and there are groups of people all tasting the same wines, and they're all asked to describe them privately, you know, the characteristics that they notice as being most prevalent in that wine, and none of their descriptions are the same.
Are the same. But, well, because the truth is, individual palates taste different things, and more to the point, smell different things, because smell is more
right.
of it. And so we're actually not perceiving those things. But at Sunset Magazine, I work with a wide range of wine drinkers, some who are just starting to like wine and realizing that they do, some that have drunk quite a bit but never paid much attention to it, and some who know quite a bit. And I listen to their questions, and it's interesting to hear what they think they need to know to find a wine that they like. I'll have a lineup of red wines that I've just tasted, and I'll put it on the giveaway table, and someone will say, what's the driest wine here? And I'm stumped, because all of those wines are dry. In the literal sense, they don't have sugar in them, but what that person is meaning is something else.
What are they meaning? In your mind?
In my mind, I think they're meaning something that is a little more astringent and maybe a little...
So we're talking tannins.
Tannins, maybe a little minerally. All of those can come... I mean, that's not dry in literal terms or in jargon terms. And then someone else will say, I don't like aromatic wines, but then they will turn around and
somebody
like,
actually said that to you?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay, all
yeah.
right. Gosh, so it smells like wine, dang
exactly.
it. Okay, all right. But let's go back to that dryness and astringency, because I think that's a concept that some people may not be too tuned in to. And I always like right. to give this example that, you know, sometimes when I use my deodorant, I'll get a little bit accidentally on my hand or finger.
Uh-huh.
And then a little later on, I will accidentally touch that, you know, to my tongue or my mouth, and you get this little puckering thing.
Sure.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't eat deodorant. But if you really want to know, honestly and truly, it's antiperspirant, not deodorant. If you put your finger on a little antiperspirant and you touch it to your tongue, that is what tannins are.
I've never, ever heard that. I'm going to have to...
Do it.
It's, I'm going to have to try
it. It has to be an antiperspirant.
Sure.
And you put a little of that on your finger and put a little on your tongue. Now, I'm not advocating eating deodorant here, but that's what dry is. And that's and it makes sense, right? It's there to keep your armpits dry.
Sure, I guess it's true.
And it works the same way as tannins. It's a bit like eating an underripe persimmon. You know, that same kind of thing that makes you pucker, it dries out
and your whole
mouth.
Tongue dries out.
And that's what dry is. And can something be dry and fruity? Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
And people equate the difference between the opposite of dry as being fruity sometimes.
Right. When the opposite of dry is sweet, even
No, the opposite of dry is wet.
You make a good point. We just are so confusing in the wine world. But I think that as far as how much you need to know to like a wine, nothing. You like it or you don't like it, and you react to it sensationally. You know, I say that about the senses. I almost think the more you drink and not just enjoy it, but actually think, huh, what was that? And then you learn something about it. If you keep doing that, I don't mean in any sort of lesson kind of way, but just in your drinking, the more you've done that, it actually, you get to the point where you enjoy a wine more if you actually know more about it. I don't mean know the facts about it, but when you taste it, you say, oh, well, that's got a nice buttery quality that I like. It's got, you know, that you actually sense some of the qualities.
Okay, so I think it's more important when you read the back label of a wine or the shelf talker at your local wine merchant, and it says that it's got hints of blackberry and whatever it is. You know, it could be, they'll use everything from leather to tobacco to hot buttered popcorn.
Sure.
To persimmons to whatever. Okay. Don't worry about trying to identify those tastes for yourself, because that's one person's opinion. And some people love rap music and some people hate it. And some people paint their houses pink and other people move out when their neighbor paints their house pink. So everybody's got different taste and different perception. I would suggest thinking more about wine like you think about music. Like sometimes I love music and I listen mm-hmm. to music really attentively. And sometimes I'll look at somebody and go, did you hear that cello? And it's like a rock and roll piece, but there's a cello in it.
Right.
And they go, no, I never noticed that. Start noticing things and don't feel compelled to try to emulate somebody else's description with your own perception of the wine, because some of it you'll get and most of it you won't.
You'll get sidetracked.
Yeah. I remember one time drinking what I thought was just this absolutely tremendous Cabernet that had, to me, a taste of bacon in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a hint of bacon. And I made the mistake of telling people at a party that I was throwing, and I had pulled this very special bottle out and served it to, you know, some of the real wine lovers there. And I said, "Can you taste the bacon in that? Isn't it amazing?" And they looked at me like I had lost my noodle. You're probably better off just to shut up and
let people
figure out why you enjoy it. Yeah. And then once you identify what it is that you enjoy in it, then you could probably communicate that to the nice person at the wine store.
Sure.
And they may be able to understand your language, but there's a good chance they won't too.
I would say that the people I work with who are so willing to taste with me any hour of the day, their comments about wines, no matter how much they know, are really telling. I mean, they're saying true things about these wines, and I learn from them too. And I also think that the more they taste, their palates sort of adjust, as all of ours do. I can remember, this is a personal story. I'm going to name names here and embarrass somebody at Sunset. Our managing editor, who is a longtime friend of mine, Alan Finney, many years ago, went on a wine tasting trip to Oregon with some of his family, and their focus was Pinot Noir. And he came back, and I got a very terse email from Alan saying, "Pinot Noir, no." He had just written off the entire variety from this trip. And so I went out of my way not to pour Pinot Noir for Alan for years. And finally, one day we had a broad tasting in the afternoon, and I saw him pick up a bottle of Pinot and pour it for himself. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm kind of coming around to this." And he had done a lot of tasting through the years, and I think his palate had picked up a taste for it.
Or he picked up a taste for a certain kind of Pinot, because
could be.
There are certain Pinots I love and more that I hate.
If you were honest.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, there are most Pinots I don't care for, but the Pinots that hit me the right way, I love.
Uh-huh.
But that's true with Cabernet. It's
very
true
personal.
With Zinfandel. It's true with any wine. There's more bad wine than good wine, if you ask me. You know, and that's just because I tend to be a little fussy. I get to drink a lot of wine.
You get
to drink a lot of wine.
I do.
And in reality, most wine is good these days.
I was just going to counter you with that.
And that is a fact. But we've gotten very particular now.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the TV dinners when baby boomers were kids that had mashed potatoes, the apple crisp,
Yes. The
slice of pressed turkey sitting on some kind of thing that wanted to be mashed potatoes. And now you go into places and they have these, even the Lean Cuisine is delicious. And we've come a long way with everything when it comes to flavors. And wine is no exception.
Very true.
But there's an awful lot of good wine out there. I will tell you this. If you really want to have some fun, no matter how much of a novice you are in wine, when you're sitting in front of the winemaker, and he or she will be a very nice person usually, taste the wine and don't say something like, "Oh, it tastes fruity," because that's really not what you want to say. But just think about what you're tasting and pick out a characteristic that you really find prominent in the wine. And then look at the winemaker and say, "I taste the taste of Jolly Ranchers in this," or whatever it is.
Sure.
And I will tell you that 9 out of 10 times, the winemaker will look back at you and say, "Get out." No, they will look back at you and they will say, "Wow, that's very perceptive of you."
Yeah.
They'll agree with, because they know that wine, and they may have not ever thought of it in the terms that you're thinking of it in, but you're probably right in what you're tasting, because all you're really doing is saying, "This is what my mouth is tasting."
I think that's absolutely a good thing to do. And if you aren't even confident in having tasted something in that wine to do that, I think winemakers also appreciate when you look at them and you say, "What were you working for when you made this wine? What's the character that you were shooting for?" And they generally will be off and running telling you.
And when they tell you that, then do you say, "Well, you certainly missed that one"?
I don't think I've ever said that.
There's no description of the wine that's wrong.
No.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And the other point is that you don't need to understand it. If you find all of this too taxing and you really are not tasting all of those things that the winemaker or the experts or the person who's trying to, they're trying to sell it to you.
There you go.
You know, it comes down to, is it good or not? Do you love it? And you know what? If you don't love it, don't buy it again.
Absolutely.
You got to love it. That's so important. And after you've tried 10,000 wines, if you don't find one you love, then drink beer.
Sure.
That's it?
I agree.
Should we end it there?
Yep. I think that's good.
10,000 wines, don't find one you love.
Go to beer.
You're a beer drinker. That's it. Join a convent. I don't know. No, they drink wine.
They do.
Yes.
Yeah, the monks really know their wines.
Yes, they do. And they foot stomp them too. Do they take their sandals off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they like that feeling on their toes.
Okay. And there's a natural yeast that, never mind.
Oh, dear.
Okay, that's going to do it for Sipping with Sarah today. We will be back, so don't go anywhere. Fill your glass up with something you like. How many people do you think, Sarah, have wine at home that they just don't like? I have a lot at home that I don't like.
I have a lot at home, but...
Can I have your wine that you don't
switch.
Like? Do you want to switch?
We should
that every time we're together. We should like bring one or two bottles of wine that we don't like and swap them.
It's a deal.
Okay, that's done. Good. All right. Look who stopped by our studio. Wine.com's Wilfred Wong, fresh from the Wine Bloggers Conference. That's next.
If you're like many wine lovers, you just can't seem to part with those corks, and the pile is growing. Turn that pile into style with an original cork cage holder from EpicStyle.com. Dozens of shapes and styles from windmills to wine barrels. These cork cages are a smash hit with wine aficionados, and you've got to see them at EpicStyle.com. Hundreds of items to add artistry and fun to any dinner or cocktail party. EpicStyle.com. Find gifts and accessories for home entertaining.
Talk about the adventure of a lifetime. Our listener trip aboard Regent Seven Seas is a grape encounter that I will never, ever forget. And the folks who made this magical journey possible are Sterling Travel. I don't know of any travel agency that does a better job when it comes to creating unforgettable experiences. At Sterling Travel, they focus on excursions that are simply second to none. That's why they work with companies like Regent Seven Seas to make sure that your Sterling Travel experience takes you to incomparable destinations and immerses you in exceptional service that totally exceeds your expectations. Before, during, and after your trip, they're with you all the way, making sure that your vacation is completely and totally off the chart. They have all kinds of adventures waiting for you, and the best way to learn more about what Sterling Travel can do for you is to log on to SterlingTravelInc.com. That's SterlingTravelInc.com. Tell them you heard about it on Grape Encounters Radio.
When you're into wine, the perfect moment can be as simple as a well-chosen bottle, two glasses, and good company. But that perfect moment can be even more special when it includes some very cool accoutrements from EpicStyle.com. Beautiful decanters that are true works of art, preservation systems, extraordinary corkscrews, wildly creative coasters, amazing wine accessories for your table or home bar. And of course, Epic Style's now legendary cork cages. Even a perfect moment can be made a little more perfect with the help of thousands of products from EpicStyle.com.
I'll be the newest fad and the latest craze. When they read about me here in my space, there'll be more joy and much less pain when I dump my brilliant brain into my blog.
He's setting down the wine glass and picking up the microphone. Here's your Grape Encounters host, David Wilson.
Okay, gotta admit, I had way too much to do last weekend, which meant that I didn't get to go to something that I have wanted to go to for a long time, and admit, I haven't been to yet, although it's just now getting to be really big. It is the Wine Bloggers Conference. Wine bloggers from all over the world that show up to this event and write about wine. Remember the days when we didn't even know what a blog was? Well, those days are long gone, and one person who was able to attend the conference is my good friend Wilfred Wong, who is the chief storyteller for Wine.com, and we've been having Wilfred on a lot lately. Hope I can have you on a lot more, Wilfred.
It's good to be here, and it's great to be in the Central Coast.
And you've never seen a studio built in a wine cellar like this, have you?
This is very unique.
I think the acoustics of the barrels are just so.
They have the right zen.
Although sometimes when we get to singing in here, we create vibrations, and the barrels will begin to leak.
That's okay.
Hey, talk to me about the Bloggers Conference. How important is that? You were at BevMo before. You're now at the biggest online wine retailer in the country.
In the U.S.
In the U.S., okay.
For sure.
So what bloggers write about is really important to your business, right?
Well, it's a very exciting trend what's happening. The Wine Bloggers Conference, this is my second time I've been there. I was in Portland 2 years ago, and I had a blast. And I met so many people. It's very diverse. So being mommy blogger, people with children, and then when they're asleep, they write a blog, that kind of thing. Or it could be some stockbroker or some banker or that type of person who does this on the side. Then there's all kinds of professionals there too. So it's a little bit of everything. But what I see is that this avenue has a lot to offer going forward, because this is where a lot of the new wine buyers live in. This is their environment.
I remember not too many years ago going to an event that was for wine writers and bloggers. And one of the things that did disturb me, and I'm just going to be painfully honest about it, is that I felt that some of the people who called themselves wine bloggers were there for the free meal and the free wine. I'm sorry, you know, and that's not to disrespect some of the really outstanding bloggers out there, but it has the potential to be a gravy train for some.
Actually, that's very true, too, because I actually asked many of these bloggers why they were here for the event. And a couple of them said, I love the free wine. But everybody pays to be at this event, so it's not exactly a free lunch.
You know, so as it should be. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the intermix is good. Sometimes people like myself in my position gets a little too snobby about being important. I mean, I don't look at myself as important. I just love what I do, and I happen to be in a good place as well. But many times a fancy wine writer or a notable guy tends to think above everyone else. Well, I like actually interacting with these people because they're real. I mean, these are people that are consumers too, and their followers are real consumers. They're not just wine people. And I want to reach out to these people very much, and I want them to reach out for me, and I'm learning from them as they are learning from me.
So for the person who is going online and trying to find information about wines and finds themselves in the blogosphere, how do you differentiate between a blogger who is really going to provide you with quality information and one who may mislead you? Is it the same rules that apply there to any other wine writer or person who's offering up tasting notes?
Well, there are some similar things here. I think that if you catch on to a blogger, the first order of the day should be pleasure. When you read a blogger, you should enjoy what the blogger is writing, the style and like that. Now, they're recommending wines, for God's sake. So it's not like surgery or some high-priced car you have to buy or a house or an investment. So you can try some of the wines that this blogger may recommend. If it turns out that you don't get it from this blogger, find another blogger. There are so many people who write.
How many do you think there are out there?
Oh, there are like
thousands.
Millions, maybe.
Millions?
A lot.
Of wine bloggers?
I don't know. There's a lot. I mean, anybody could be a blogger. All you have to do is just put up a little website and you're a blogger.
Yeah. Have you come across some that you love to read yourself?
Oh, yeah. Some that are really fun. And what I find about some of these bloggers is that they're throwing away all of the old, stodgy, snobby, who cares? I mean, the information about wines, you can always get the real information from the winery websites. So I would suggest that the public, those that want to follow wine and food, look at bloggers that they enjoy reading, and then they can confirm information off of the winery's website, because the winery will have accurate information about their wine.
Tell the folks in the land of Grape Encounters how to find a good blogger.
That's a good question.
Where do you start? Come on.
I think you should start with me.
Okay, fine. I'll pitch you. Where's your blog? Where do they find you?
It's on wine.com.
Yeah, that's right.
You go on the website. You get on there. I also write my own blog. I have a fan page that I also write about wines as well. I have actually a bunch of different blogs I write on.
How many fans do you have?
I have like 5,300 fans. And then I have on my personal Facebook, I have like 3,200 people or so. then I have about 3,500 people or 34 who followed me on Twitter.
So just go to wine.com, and what is the blog called? Does it just say Wilfred Wong or Wong on Wine?
No, it's wine.com's blog. Well, if you go on our website, wine.com, there's a link to it there. I blog at least once or sometimes twice a week, and my colleague also blogs as well. So the blog's not only mine, but I do a lot of those blogs.
Now, you could go also when you're Googling wine blogs, you'd be able to see, I mean, the ones that are floating up to the top are the ones that are getting the most hits, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably a good indication that they're probably a decent blog or they've learned how to beat the system.
Yeah.
One of the two.
That's a good point. If you go on Google and you put wine blogs and see the ones that float up at the top and then click on them and just read them when you're casually relaxing and having a glass of Pinot Noir from Central Coast, you'd be good.
A lot of the major magazines, they blog as well.
Oh, yeah. So,
you know, our good friend, Sarah Schneider, she's a blogger and a writer.
Well, you know, most good writers are now blogging because you have the place to put it into. Do it.
It's Wilfred Wong from wine.com. Wilfred, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by. Next time, bring wine, would you?
I will.
Thank you.
And food.
Yes, thank you. All right. We'll catch you later. And we'll catch up with you again next week as we celebrate the beginning of our sixth year of Grape Encounters. I'm David Wilson. Cheers.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.